You are listening to Real World News.
COP19 interview with Sarah Jane Clifton, Friends of the Earth International. On Friday, at the end of the first week of the 19th Conference of the Parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is taking place in Warsaw, Poland, Real World Radio interviewed Sarah Jane Clifton, coordinator of the Climate Justice and Energy Program of Friends of the Earth International. On that day, the Environmental Federation had announced Japan's lack of action to tackle climate change after the country announced at the COP that it would not fulfill its commitment to cut its greenhouse gas emissions. During the interview, Sarah Jane analyzed the announcement, the action of several developed countries during the negotiations, how some developing countries are reacting, as well as a new report launched by Friends of the Earth International right before the COP called Good Energy, Bad Energy, Transforming Our Energy System for People on the Planet.
Well, Jose, what happened was in the middle of the night, Warsaw time, the Japanese government announced that they are actually downgrading their target for reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. So all of the rich industrialized countries in the UN climate negotiations, they have, well, not all, some have submitted targets to reduce their emissions. And these targets were already very, very low. We went into the negotiations with the total promised emissions reductions from developing countries, from the poor countries who've done the least to cause a climate crisis, being greater than those proposed by the rich countries. And yet what we saw last night was Japan announcing that it's actually lowering its target further. So it's going, it's downgrading its promise to reduce emissions with the new target, meaning that Japan's emissions are actually going to go up by around 3% on 1990 levels by 2020. To understand why this is so important, we only need to look back at the report of the International Panel on Climate Change, the body of the world's leading climate scientists, which was announced in September, which showed just how stark the climate crisis was. And obviously, we don't need scientists to tell us that. We see that every day now with the disasters around the world, most recently the terrible typhoon in the Philippines. But what the IPCC report told us was that the not only is it very, very clear now and certain that climate change is man-made, but actually there's concerns that the impacts are happening faster than expected and the impacts are going to be greater than expected, which points to the need for rich industrialized countries to deliver on their commitment to reduce their emissions as fast as possible. And so why this is so terrible is because we're seeing these countries actually doing the opposite. Canada was the country that first announced that they were going to go back on their pledge, and now we're seeing Japan announcing that it's going back on its pledge as well.
Yes, Sarah, it is pretty clear that we are going in the pathway towards a catastrophic climate change, as the press release of Friends of the Earth International states, when we are talking also about the fifth largest emitter of greenhouse gases, because Japan is the fifth largest emitter. Is it okay, Sarah?
Yes, you're right. Japan is a very high emitter. It's one of the rich industrialized countries who in total are responsible for 3/4 of global historic greenhouse gas emissions, despite the fact that they only host 15% of the world's population. So Japan is one of the rich industrialized countries who, under the UN Climate Convention, have committed to reduce their emissions first and fastest, and also to provide finance to developing countries so that those countries can develop cleanly without reliance on fossil fuels and also adapt to the impacts of climate change. Japan and the other rich countries have this obligation. It's a moral obligation, but it's also a legal obligation under the convention. And yet what we've seen since the convention was signed in 1992, and especially since the Copenhagen climate talks, has been a dragging of their feet to actually deliver on these commitments, and attempts by these countries not only to not deliver on their commitments, but to actually unravel and break down the whole structure of the convention, which was set in place to actually try and tackle the climate crisis and stop climate change.
I was asking myself, Sarah, about other industrialized countries which always have played a key role destroying the UN system on climate change, as for example Canada, Australia, the United States, the European Union. What can you say to us about what has been happening in this first week of the negotiations there in Warsaw? What have been the developments of these industrialized countries or other that maybe have played an important role there now?
Well, Jose, Japan's announcement is not the only concerning thing that's happened this week at the climate talks. The main issues on the table this week, there are sort of three main areas where we needed to see progress in the negotiations. The first one was on emissions reduction. So countries are supposed to be talking about how to reduce emissions before 2020, and also how to, on the issue of equity, how to divide up who takes responsibility for which emissions reductions after 2020. They're also supposed to be talking about climate finance and the repayment of climate debt by rich industrialized countries. And they're also supposed to be talking about the really important issue of loss and damage. This is quite a new issue on the agenda of the climate talks. And it's been put on the agenda because of the change that are beyond adaptation, that they won't be able to adapt to. We saw that many of the impacts of the typhoon in the Philippines last week were beyond adaptation. Even with coastal walls and strong buildings, many of those communities would still have been devastated. So because of this, and recognizing the need for protection and support for these affected communities, the G77, the group of over 190 developing countries, has proposed a new mechanism to support these affected communities. We really needed this progress on these areas in the negotiation. But instead, not only have we seen the announcement by Japan that it's downgrading its emissions reductions, but also we've seen the United States pushing an approach called pledge and review, which is basically an approach which would mean that there's no regulation, there's no obligation for rich industrialized countries to reduce its emissions, and also the U.S. pushing private finance, so basically pushing to count the private investment of its corporations in developing countries as climate finance, as the finance that it's obliged to provide to developing countries to tackle the climate crisis. And finally, we've seen Australia blocking the discussion on loss and damage. Australia is actually saying that it will not even allow countries in negotiations to discuss the proposal for a loss and damage mechanism to provide support for communities whose lives are devastated by the climate crisis. So we're seeing these countries, these rich industrialized countries, Japan, the United States, Australia, and obviously previously Canada, lining up to really undermine the global effort to tackle the climate crisis, and obviously putting the world at even greater risk of runaway catastrophic climate breakdown.
Sara, if you have to underline one government or a couple of governments or a group of governments which are playing, in your opinion, a positive role, really taking into account the danger that we are facing with this catastrophic climate change that we are going towards. Would you underline any kind of group or countries which are working very, very good in this COP in Warsaw? Do you see a positive role there?
We definitely seeing positive role from the ALBA countries, particularly from Bolivia, in the proposals that they're putting forward, which are really about climate justice and really advancing the interests of affected communities. But I think what's notable is the fact that the proposal on loss and damage is a proposal from the whole of the group of G77 countries. This is really significant. This is a very large number of developing countries who have very diverse interests. And the fact that this whole group of developing countries, over 190, as I said, that this whole group of countries has agreed to this proposal and is very strongly asserting the need to discuss this proposal on loss and damage, really shows the terrible state that the climate talks are now in, because it shows how little hope these countries have about the possibility of getting real progress on mitigation, real progress on the cuts in emissions by rich countries, rich industrialized countries, that we need to see to avoid the climate crisis. And I think this is a very positive development, the fact that these countries, the developing countries, those that have done the least to cause the climate crisis, are standing together strongly once again and putting forward this demand. for a loss and damage mechanism. The hope is that they continue to stand strongly together and push further on the need for the basic blocks of a strong, ambitious and just climate treaty, the rich country emissions reductions, the public climate finance to developing countries, and obviously progress on these areas of that adaptation and loss and damage.
Okay, Sarah, we know that Friends of the Earth International has as one of the most important general topics there in the COP the issue on energy. And before the beginning of the COP, Friends of the Earth International launched a new report which is called Good Energy, Bad Energy, Transforming Our Energy System for People and the Planet. We know also that the report underlines the importance of a just, sustainable, climate-safe energy system in the wake of these warnings that we were saying about, which are calling the scientists as the planetary emergency, which is what is happening with the climate change. Sarah, what things the Federation, Friends of the Earth International, has been doing in the COP regarding the energy issue especially?
Well, Jose, I mean, the first thing that we've been doing, which connects to energy, is actually trying to expose the corporate capture of the COP and the negotiations more broadly, and the UNFCCC process more broadly. We've been worried about the issue of corporate capture, the negotiations, for some years now, and it's been very clear, as I said, that since Copenhagen, we haven't seen the progress in the negotiations that we need, and our analysis and the growing analysis of the climate justice movement is that this is because of the corporate capture of our negotiations and the international climate process, particularly by those companies and their interests that have a financial and I said a vested interest in dirty, polluting energy, the fossil fuels industry, but also other kind of dirty energy corporations. What's concerning and what we've really been trying hard to expose here in Poland is how this is the most corporate COP yet. It is the COP where the climate negotiations where we've seen really the most visible and blatant corporate capture. The Polish presidency of the COP organized the first time a special pre-COP meeting which had privileged access to businesses and businesses to meet negotiators and ministers, whereas civil society was completely shut out. And that COP special meeting announced permanently increased the access of corporations to negotiations. It's also the first climate talks that actually have corporate sponsorship, and we're seeing a number of major polluting, destructive industries connected to fossil fuels and connected to dirty energy who are actually partners in the negotiations. So, for example, ArcelorMittal, which is the world's largest steel and mining company, the French energy conglomerate Alstom, car manufacturers such as BMW and General Motors, and also Emirates, which is an airline. So to just give you one example, ArcelorMittal, as I said, this is the world's largest steel and mining company. The steel industry is highly, highly polluting, and also many of the products that ArcelorMittal mines are highly polluting. And this company has lobbied aggressively against strict climate policies in the EU. It's made massive windfall profits from the European Union emissions trading system. And it's the focus of global campaigns by communities affected by ArcelorMittal's operations, their pollution, the health and safety in their plants, the labor problems in their plants, and other many negative social and environmental impacts on vulnerable communities around the world. So we've been trying really hard to show this corporate capture in the negotiations and how the fossil fuel industry and dirty energy is one of the main central drivers of the climate crisis and one of the main challenges we need to address if we're actually going to stop the climate crisis. We need to stop the corporate capture of our governments by these companies, but we also need to transform the energy system into one that's climate safe, which provides energy to communities around the world and meets the basic needs for energy of communities around the world, and also which has none of these very devastating impacts on communities and environment that we see from current destructive energy. None of the impacts like the significant health and air pollution and water pollution we see from coal, the displacement of communities that we see from coal mining, oil and gas exploration, mega dams, none of these negative impacts and our new report sets out a vision for that, what that sort of system might look like, and some steps of how we think we could get there. But it's the beginning of a conversation that we feel is needed amongst civil society and social movements to build a common collective vision for a better energy system and how we might get there.
You have been really, really, really kind and very clear, Sarah. I'm going to do just my last question. What about the demonstrations there in Warsaw? Have anything happened in the streets? What about the civil society presence? Are there plans for demonstrations, actions? What can you tell us about that?
So there have actually been many demonstrations, actually inside the talks this time. Lots and lots of activities and actions by youth climate justice activists to expose the corporate capture of the talks that I told you about. Also, tomorrow there's planned an action, a demonstration at Frontex. This is the European Union's immigration body, and it's responsible for really enforcing in a very strict and destructive way the closure of Europe's borders against the immigrants and refugees from the climate crisis. But the main demonstration tomorrow, there's going to be a big demonstration on the streets of Warsaw of climate justice activists campaigning for real action and negotiations, but also for clean energy for Polish people so that Poland can really support the transition to a climate-safe world, and also so that the Polish people can really benefit from that transition. And on Monday, there's going to be a lot of protests because, as part of this corporate capture, the Polish presidency has organized a coal summit right in the middle of the negotiations, where it's bringing together the world's coal industry, very ironically, one of the main culprits for the climate crisis, is being brought together here in Warsaw. So many civil society groups and social movements are going to be protesting at that coal summit to expose the utter hypocrisy of having such a summit in the middle of the climate talks, and to really expose the negative impacts of coal and how we need to basically cut coal and get out of coal mining, the coal industry, with a strong just transition for coal sector workers, but actually moving to other renewable, climate-safe energy sources for the world.
Okay, Sarah, I really, really appreciate your time. You are in the COP right now. You are in Warsaw, in this COP19. You are ending the day. We know that it is very exhausting, spending whole days working there. So we really appreciate your words. In the name of Real World Radio, thank you very much. Those were the words of Sarah Jane Clifton, one of the coordinators of the Climate Justice and Energy Program of Friends of the Earth International. Sarah, again, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jose. It's always a pleasure to talk to Real World Radio.
You are listening to Real World News.